Good morning, beloved ones.
Morning.
Turn to someone and tell them, I call you friend. I call you friend. Yes. I call you friend. Just once again, I do want to extend a warm welcome to our newfound friends and our newfound family. And as I said before, remember that should you ever return and come into this place, that you will always be a friend and you will always be a part of the Unity family. This is a place that welcomes all, that acknowledges the love of God in and through all, and we celebrate you. We acknowledge the Christ in you, and we're so grateful and thankful that you now are fellow sojourners along the path of life. And we need each other as we walk this journey of life, do we not?
Yes.
Is there anybody here who thinks and believes that they have traveled this path alone? Is there anybody here who has done whatever it is that they have done, that they believe that they have done it all by themselves?
No.
Nobody. Nobody. Because even coming into life, we come into life needing the support, the help, the encouragement, the nourishment, the guidance of another soul. Or we will not survive. Is that not correct? And the same energy, that same thought that we cannot survive without one another is still true for us. It just so happens when we get grown, we think we are on our own. But we need one another. That's the nature of life. There's an intricate fabric of weaving everything together. We're all connected to one another, whether we know it or not. And so how we deal with life, how we look at life, how we engage life is very important. Every day lately, it seems that something monumental is occurring. We all know that whether it's a physical disaster, there's Irma and Harvey and Jose and Katina, I think, or Katia, and there'll be more and more, but all these things that are occurring, political shockers, human interest stories, something that is commanding our attention. Don't you feel that way? You wake up, what is commanding and demanding my attention? And this is crucial because how we are looking at life right now and all of the things that are occurring in life, how we are looking at it will have a great bearing on our inner state of mind and being, whether you are aware of it or not. Because it's all vibration, and the vibration affects us, right? And so everything, how we're looking at it, is really important because it's affecting whether we will either feel the stress of life or if we're going to be able to put it all in perspective and therefore be able to sort of maintain our peace. Maintain our peace as the theme for this year's World Day of Prayer, peace in the midst. See, in the midst of the storm, there is the eye of the storm. There is that place, that sacred place where peace exists in the midst of confusion, turbulence, whatever you want. It's in the midst of it. Sometimes we think that life means that everything's going to be hunky-dory, there'll be no disturbance, but that's not peace. Peace is something that occurs in the midst of the disturbance, in that eye of the storm. And so the eye of the storm for me carries great significance because it has something to do with how I am seeing and perceiving that which is swirling around me, that which is occurring and taking place in the outer. How do I see that? Is it something that's causing me great stress, or am I able to maintain my peace in the midst of it. And for me, it all depends upon whether we have a bird's eye view or a worm's eye view. See, when you have a worm's eye view, you really can't see very much. Only basically what is right before you, right? Just in front of you. What's just in front of you when you have a worm's eye view? And in this worm's eye view, your view is basically very limited. But however, you probably feel that your whole world is contained with what you can see, right? You probably feel when you have a worm's eye view, you think that it is the world. You think that what you're seeing is reality, the totality of reality, right? You think that it's the world at its finest, right? It is what it is. It is the way I see that it is, right? It is the way it is. But that may not be true. When you have a worm's eye view of life and your experiences, you have a tendency to get caught up in the weeds, in the minutiae of life. And when I was reading my notes, I thought I wrote manure of life. And I went, what? But as I thought about that, I said, well, it's the same thing. You know, my handwriting is a little, even I have to look at it, so I was like, what? But whether it's the minutia of life, it means you're getting caught up in the stuff that really doesn't matter. It's the waste. Waste thoughts. Waste feelings. Things that carry little value and energy, but we're all caught up in it. Look what they said. And look, see, what I'm noticing, you know, the people who are dealing with Harvey, like they said, it didn't matter. When you were in that water or in that car, you didn't care if it was a black person, a white person, a green person, anybody who would save you, right? You can't get hung up in the minutia. All that stuff goes out the window. And so all of a sudden, sometimes you need to have a bird's eye view of life, of what's really important. Because with a bird's eye view, that means you can take in a higher perspective. You can see a larger picture of what might be going on. You can take more into account. And when you can take more into account, when you can see, I can see, this is a bird's eye view. It's quite different than when I'm sitting down there and I'm only looking out here. I might think this is the only view that there is. But there's more, right? When you have that bird's eye view, you can make better choices and make better decisions because you have more information to work with, right? You can see more. You usually, when you have a bird's eye view, you're more open and receptive to the infinite possibilities of what else could be because you can see more. Right? You can stay above the fray. You're not in the weeds. You're not down with the limited vision, but you can look up and you can see something that is greater. And with that, you then have the ability to experience less stress because you see more opportunities, more solutions, more ways, more choices. I can go down that aisle. I can go down that aisle. I can go down that aisle. I can go out that door. I can go out that door. There's more for you to choose from. Less stress than if this is the only path I must walk. What else can it be? In unity, we often speak of seeking a higher consciousness. When we sing our thoughts or prayers, what are we saying? Let us seek a higher consciousness where we know that God is there. So we talk about seeking a higher consciousness or seeking a perspective that takes into account the divine. When we say seek a higher consciousness, it means we are asking ourselves to seek a spiritual perspective, a higher consciousness, something that's higher than just my thoughts, my views, my approach. I want to see a higher consciousness. I want to see what there is in the realm of the divine. And so when we say seek this higher consciousness, in this perspective that is more spiritual, why would we do that? Simply because when God is thrown into the mix of things, things change. Right? When you are able to lay hold of some spiritual principles and spiritual laws and utilize them and activate them and apply them, not just come here on church and hear them, but when you work with them in your lives, things change. Right? When you can embody spiritual qualities of being, the essence of the divine, when you can embody love, when you can embody forgiveness, when you can embody peace or illumination or order, whatever it is, wisdom, when you can embody that, things change. Unity is about you living a transformed life. It is about you having a higher perspective on whatever is taking place in life. Because what really changes is not those things, but you. How you see things begins to change. How you act, how you react, how you interact. All of those things, when you're coming from a higher perspective, all of those things will have a bearing on how you experience them. How you experience life. What you will either draw to you or repel from you. How you see things, how you experience, because every experience is personal. You get to determine how you will experience a thing. See, the worm thinks, oh, this is the way everybody's experiencing it. But every experience is personal because you get to decide how you will name that experience, whether you'll name it good, whether you'll name it bad, or whether you'll name it whatever you like. Indifferent, it doesn't apply to it, however you want to name it. But know this, that as you name that thing, so too do you experience it as you have named it. This is spiritual law. So you get to name it. You want to name it bad, you experience it as bad. You name it good, you experience the good. So if that's true, therefore we should become more skilled at naming something. We need to watch what we're naming. What's the condition of your condition? How are you speaking it? How are you seeing it? Because that is how you will feel it and how you will experience it and how you will live it. And how you live it then is how you think life is, how you are perceiving it. And so we need to be more skilled at our perceptions, at our naming things, and not really be willing to jump to conclusions without knowing whether we are coming from a bird's eye view or from a worm's eye view. You need to stop. You can stop and say, now, is this a bird's eye view? Or is this a worm's eye view? Scripture tells us in John 7:24, judge not according to the appearance, but judge ye by what? Righteous judgment. Meaning, and this is the way it says in the New Living Translation version, it says, look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. And the Message version of the scripture puts it this way. Don't be nitpickers. Use your head and heart to discern what is right, to test what is authentically right. Judge ye not by the realm of appearances, but judge ye by righteous judgments. In other words, there's always more than meets the worm's eye view, more than what is literally appearing. So train yourself to ask these questions. Well, what else is here? What else can this mean? What is the spiritual principle or the spiritual lesson or the spiritual perspective for me to gain? What is the higher view? What is it that God would have me to do, to learn, to understand, and to know? That's a powerful question right there. What is it that God would have me to do, to learn, right, to understand, and to know? Because the moment you ask that question, you know the answer has to be about something good, right? If you ask that question, it has to be about some higher qualities of being. It has to have some level of the qualities of God: love, forgiveness, understanding, justice, faith, compassion, understanding, all of these things. Because if you get some answers that is contrary to the absolute goodness of God, if you come up with something that speaks to ill, if you're coming up with something that speaks to harm, if you're coming up with something that speaks to injustice, inequality, hatred, selfishness, fear, and any other limiting quality of being, then you know that ain't God. That is not coming from God, but that probably is coming from somewhere in your human consciousness. Coming from the egoic nature of humanity's consciousness, human consciousness. So we got to begin then to check out and to recognize when we are coming from either the worm's eye view or the bird's eye view. You got to check out whether you're coming from human consciousness or your human nature or your spiritual nature. Check out whether it's your ego or is it your Christ consciousness speaking. Check out whether it's a worldly opinion, a worldly view, a worldly assessment, or a heavenly view, a heavenly assessment, a higher consciousness, a higher assessment. Is it something that is causing you to feel separate from God, separate from your other, your brother? Or is it something that is joining you together, causing you to feel one with life, one with your brother? That is quite simple. If I feel separate from you, see, and we look on the outer and think you're different than me. But when you take a breath, it's the same breath of God that fills you, that fills me. It's the same breath of life that is filling every soul on this planet. And so when we look beyond, underneath the exterior of anything that is beyond the appearance, and you touch that which is righteous, you touch that which is divine, you touch that with the spirit, there's only one spirit. It's animating and moving in infinite number of ways. Look at the beauty that God is moving in. When I look out here, look at how God is manifesting. How can I say that that's not God expressing? Because God is living and moving and having its being in that soul, in that soul, in that soul. In all of life. And so we don't want to get hung up in the world of appearances, but we want to be able to understand righteous judgment. And what is righteous judgment? Well, simply it's anything that causes you to see or to discern from a higher perspective, a spiritual perspective. That's what righteous judgment is. And it must be unifying. God is love. As love, it is a unifying force. If it is a separating force, it is not God. It must be unifying. It must have an energy of goodness about it, because goodness, absolute goodness, is godness. If it is pure goodness, it is godness, right? So it must have the absolute good, the highest good for all concerned, not just the highest good for my peeps, the highest good for that which I'm concerned about, the highest good for my thoughts, my opinions, my views, the highest good of what all concerned. Then you know that it's speaking for God, of God. See, these questions, whatever you begin to ask them, they immediately take you to a higher perception, right? A higher perspective. And they begin to ground you, but to ground you not in the worm's eye view, but to ground you in heavenly consciousness, in higher consciousness, to ground you in a higher knowledge, a higher wisdom, a higher seeing. Scripture says, my thoughts are not my thoughts, right? God says, your thoughts ain't like mine. Mine are greater than yours. So I need to get to the greater. I need to get to the higher consciousness, the God thoughts, not just simply my thoughts. And when you begin to do that and you begin to look for the good, for that higher perspective, it becomes powerful, because as you begin to look for it, all of a sudden you begin to draw it to you. Under spiritual law, you begin to hold that vision and hold that vibration. All of a sudden, you begin to draw it to you. When you look with the inner eye, you draw, or a spiritual vision or spiritual perception, you draw into visibility that which is invisible. Is that not the definition of faith? Right? It's the substance of things what not seen, but it becomes the evidence of things hopeful. When you have that higher perspective, all of a sudden you can manifest that into your reality. So no matter what your situation is, you can call forth good. You can call on God, no matter what it is. And you don't have to start out outwardly first by trying to set everything right out here. You want to first start within. We live from within out. So you want to begin to first begin to see it rightly. See the truth. See God in it. See God in the midst of all. Peace in the midst of. And let that seeing begin to lead you and guide you. Your life is a powerful journey from unconsciousness to higher consciousness. From human consciousness to Christ consciousness. Spiritual consciousness. And as we move, it's a journey. So we move from the lower to the higher. We have stages that we go through. There's a perspective that we move when we have this revelation that I need to elevate my consciousness. I need to change how I'm seeing things. I need to change how I'm living, change how I'm expressing, change what I'm believing in, change and transform so that I can move into that which is greater for me. I read a powerful article by a woman named Mary O'Malley, and she talks about these six levels of consciousness. And actually, she takes some of it from Reverend Michael Beckwith with Agape International, and I believe he might have also received that from somebody else, and I'm not sure who. But this is what Spirit gave this morning, to look at these six levels of consciousness, because it's so important to understand, because they'll either keep us in a state of suffering or move us to a feeling of liberation and freedom to be able to live all out from a higher consciousness. So these six levels of consciousness are this. The first level is, and it's all about life, how we see life. The first level is we see that life happens to you. Second stage is life happens by you. The third stage is life happens in you. The fourth stage is life happens for you. Fifth stage is life happens through you. And the sixth stage is life is you. Now, this first stage, life happens to you. Now, we've all been in this stage. In this stage, when life happens to you, you feel that you have absolutely no control over it, right? Why is this happening to me again? See, this, and it's true, there's stuff that's going to happen of which you have absolutely no control over. But sometimes when we're in this state of life happens to you or to me, it's being done to me, we can get to a place where we can feel like a victim, right? I don't have any control over life. Look, this is what they said. My boss did this and da-da-da-da-da, and I had to do that. I had no control. Yeah, we're a victim. But here's the thing. You can only stay in victim consciousness for so long, because even a victim gets tired after a while, right? You get tired of that, and all of a sudden there begins to be a little movement within you, and you are moved to the second phase, or the second level, which is life happens by you. Because in this stage, you start to feel, well, you know what? Maybe I can do something about this. I can take some action. I can make some choices. I can do something about my life. I can make things happen. They happen by me. They don't have to happen to me. I go to counseling. I go to therapy. They told me doesn't have to happen to me. I'm now empowered, so it happens what? By me. So now we start to put on that little strut. Yeah. Life is happening through me. Oh, we can get stuck in this consciousness, because then we begin to think that maybe we can control everything. But you can't control every aspect of your life, but you can control what? Some parts of it. But then we're told sometimes, especially in New Thought, you have to watch it, because sometimes New Thought will say you can do everything. You can control your whole life, and that may not necessarily be true. You can control what experience, we'll get to that, but you can't control everything that happens. I can't control what's happening out here. But sometimes in this second phase, I might, as I'm taking on my own personal sense of power, I might also overstep it a little bit and think that I am the assistant manager of the universe and I can control all things. Yes, as we begin to work with spiritual law, we can have some effect on things, but we need to keep that in perspective, because thinking that you can control everything is also exhausting. Right? Thinking you got to carry everything is all up to you. That's tiring too. And so you want to lay that down, and all of a sudden, when you're recognizing that I can't control everything, you move to the third phase, which is life happens in you. It happens in you. So it happens to you, you move to happens by you, you making it happen to, but it happens in me. Now here you're starting to elevate your consciousness a little bit, because what is, you begin to see that there is a correlation between the thoughts and the feelings and the attitudes and the perceptions that you are holding and what's happening in your individual life. You're starting to see, wow, I'm experiencing life this particular way, but it's happening in me. You're starting to recognize that I have some responsibility by what I'm manifesting. Maybe not everything, but I'm manifesting certain conditions in my life because it's what's taking place, what? In me, in my consciousness, in my thoughts, in my choices, in my approach. Remember, friends, we don't see things as they are. We see them as what? We are. So we start to recognize, I might be the central figure and character in all of this mess that's going on in my life. So there's an awakening that happens. You start to recognize, maybe I have a part, not in controlling everything, but I have a part with what is taking place in me. See, now all of a sudden, you begin to start to cook with some gas. Because now you're beginning to open up to a higher perspective, and you're able to see that something takes place in you that also then manifests outside of you. And you're starting to begin to connect the dots a little bit better. And when you have this perspective that there's something in you that has a part in what's taking place outside of you, you began to look for, well, what is greater than me? If I'm the one that's in the way, if I'm the one that's participating, but is there something else? Because I don't have control over everything. So maybe there's something high. Now you begin to open up to a higher perspective. That thought, well, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. But there is a greatness in me that is really above and beyond this little sense of me. Perhaps there's a greater force at work in my life. Perhaps I am working with it, but there's something else. So now you're beginning to open up to the universe. You begin to open up and have a larger perspective of life, to the realm of universe, to the realm of God, to the realm of spirit, to the realm of things. And then all of a sudden, you're ready for the fourth stage, right? Which is life then, once you recognize that there's a higher force, a higher presence, God, whatever you want to call it, not only in you and that you have a connection to it, and that you have responsibility for the thoughts and feelings and actions and choices that you're making. You are responsible for your life, but there's a force greater than you working in your life and affairs. You're ready for the fourth step, which is that life happens for you. All of a sudden, you're no longer a victim. No longer do you have to carry everything on the load and do it yourself and make it happen. I'm going to pray this thing. I'm going to make it happen. But now there's something else. There's an inward world. There's something else that takes place. And there's something deeper than even that which is in me. It's he that is in me. Now you're opening up to life happens for you. The universe, all of a sudden, is conspiring to help you. That the universe is designed. Everything is designed for you. To lift you up, to bless you, to heal you, to bring the goodness of God into your life and affairs. Well, maybe I better lift my consciousness and go within. I shall lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from what? The Lord. I don't have to do this alone. I've got help right at my fingertips. So now you're in this state where you are open and receptive to the divine will and work and blessings of God. You're willing to now take this beautiful step into how you can move with and through the Spirit of God working with you and for you. So then when you get to this open and grace-filled state of mind, and you see that the universe is starting to work for you and blessings come and your life begins to shift and change because you're now working in tandem with God, the good, not on your own, and not also not sitting back and saying, God, you just do it. Bring me my millions. No, there's a working relationship. And once you do that, the universe begins to work. You speak the prayer, and then the prayer manifests. You do your part, God, the universe does its part. And once the blessings start to flow, and you're now settled at this level, of this fourth level, you move now into the fifth level, which is the fifth stage, which is life is happening through you. Because when life happens for you and you are blessed, all of a sudden, you're more willing to be of service. You have a more generous and magnanimous spirit. There's a spirit of generosity. There's a spirit of giving. Why? Because you trust now that you have faith in God. You have faith that you're going to be taken care of. You have faith that God will work things out. So you don't have to be into your own little space, fearful of everything. Somebody's trying to get my good. You understand that the universe and life is working for you. And so now it can work through you. So you begin to what? Bless others. You begin to be a blessing, to be of service. And all of a sudden the divine begins to use you as a sacred vessel. See, you then become not just the worm of the dust. You now are an empowered child, an energy and expression of God that God begins to use and move and has its being in and through and as you. You become a blessing. You become a light bearer. You understand the universe begins to move through you in this stage. And once that happens with an open heart and an open mind and you're open and you're receptive, before you know it, you are at that sixth stage of consciousness, which is life is you. You no longer see a sense of separation. You recognize that everything is connected to everything else. That there's nothing that is apart from God and nothing that you are apart from. The living trees, the animals, the birds, all of it, this earth, we are a part of it. We're getting to see that we are a part of the earth. You can no longer do things to the earth without it now affecting you and your life. You are a part of it. So all of a sudden, life is you. You're relaxed, you're open, you're receptive, you're functioning from a higher level. You will then become a force for good in the world, a force for God in the world. That's having a bird's eye view. You're soaring above the fray. You're soaring into the heights of truth that will set you and everybody else free. I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills. From whence cometh my help? My help cometh from the Lord. I keep my consciousness high. I keep my mind stayed on God, stayed on the good, stayed on the truth. I choose to look up. I choose to see from a higher perspective and consciousness. So I ask you in closing, how is your view? How are you seeing life? If I ask and you tell me, oh, well, this happened, well, you, oh. I know right then you got a worm's eye view. When you can say, you know what, I'm working through it. I'm looking up. There's a solution. There's an answer. There's an approach. There's a path. There's a way. Because God can make a way out of no way. So we work with that. How's your view? What you see is up to you. As for me and my household, I'm going to see it all good. I'm going to name it all good. I'm going to keep my eyes lifted up. And when I say up, I mean inward. Inward to the spirit of the living God. I'm going to fly high. You ready to fly?
Yes.
Blessings and namaste. Blessings. Blessings. Thank you.